I'm John Kroll. Today is Election Day, the culmination of a long and often brutal campaign year. On this No Limits, we will talk about the roads traveled as Americans and Hoosiers have moved toward this day of decision. We'll talk about where we have been and what lies ahead. My guests are two veterans of Indiana's political wars, Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Two. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Our email is nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. Today is Election Day, so we're going to be talking politics. We're going to be talking about what's gone on in this historic campaign this year. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are not only two veterans of Indiana's political wars, but two veterans of the program, returning guests, Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Two. Welcome, guys. It's good to have you here in the studio with us.
It's good to be here.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
So, overall, let's just start. There's a lot to talk about because Indiana, in a weird way, has once again become one of the focal points of the political universe. Let's talk a little bit about what we think right now have been the overarching themes of this election season. First at the national level, and then we'll drill down to the state. Marcus, I'll start with you.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, Donald Trump's whole theme has been he thinks that America has lost influence worldwide. He thinks that, you know, he's put a focus on trade with domestic policy, and he's said, I'm an outsider. I'm going to do things completely different. He uses the phrase drain the swamp all the time, and really he's kind of focused on Hillary Clinton and some of the scandals, if you want to call them that, things that she's been involved in and kind of taken the attack there. And I think that's been his main theme for his campaign.
Kip.
Well, obviously, the Clinton campaign has been about continuity with the Obama campaign. Moving America forward, I think, is what they've said. I would agree with Marcus with respect to what the Trump campaign has been trying to at intermittent points, trying to make the point that it's about change and throwing the establishment out.
The thing we hear most from voters, from people who've called in about this, been the negativity of this campaign, where really, and you know, I mean, even we had Dan Coats on here just about a week and a half ago, and He made reference to the fact that we've got the two most unpopular presidential candidates in the history of polling, basically. I don't know if you can say the history of the United States because they didn't take polls back in the 19th century. But and I guess what I would like to ask you guys is this sort of a forerunner of what's to come with all campaigns going forward? Because really, from my perspective, often this race has been about not so much Donald Trump making a case for Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton making a case for Hillary Clinton. It's Hillary Clinton making a case that Donald Trump is not acceptable in any fashion, and Donald Trump trying to make a case that Hillary Clinton is not acceptable in any fashion, and therefore just take me as the lesser of two evils. Is that where we're going? And I'll start with Kip this time so that we keep things even.
I'm not sure it's more negative than past campaigns, really, if you look at it. Certainly the tone has been more negative, but the number of negative commercials and the number of attack ads probably are about the same that they generally are in presidential campaigns. It's just I think most people are reacting to what I've reacted to, and that is – I really do believe, this is going to sound partisan, but I really do believe that Donald Trump has lowered the tone, the way he speaks at the microphone, the way his advocacy and the words he uses is a level that we've not seen before in politics, and I think it's unique to him.
You guys are allowed to be partisan. We've identified you as Democrat and Republican.
Well, then I will completely disagree with Kip. No, okay, yeah, you know, I do think that that's a little bit of selective choosing of negativity. But to your larger point, I think every 4 years we come around and we say this is the most negative campaign ever. And I was a government major in college, and historically we're not near the most negative campaigns ever in American history. But I think that we're much more aware. The way we communicate now is much more direct. And with social media coming on board, it's much more of a personal – people take a personal part in campaigns and communicating on their Twitter and on their Facebook. You know, and then, you know, I think some of the things Hillary Clinton has said has been things that we haven't heard before from presidential candidates, when she called millions of Americans deplorable. And then, you know, it's hard to match that message with a "I will unite the country" message. Either way, though, I think that it's safe to say, and I think we could agree on that, you know, both these campaigns have gone to depth that we probably haven't seen in recent history in some of their attacks, whether it be the candidate directly or coming from their campaign. And where this goes forward, I like to think that, you know, everything is cyclical. We do have swings, and really it kind of depends on the nature of the campaign, what's the mood in the country, and the candidates themselves as individuals in how you see campaigns prosecuted. And I think moving forward, a lot of candidates will kind of look at just when you said, Senator Coates said, we have two of the most unpopular presidential candidates. I think that the tone of this campaign has fed into that. And I think that there will be candidates in the future that will say, I don't want to bring it there, because I think that there's much more of a chance moving forward that the negativity of that might stick with you for a long time.
You know, one of the interesting things, though, to take off on that a little bit, is that when Hillary Clinton was first lady, and when she was a U.S. senator, and then again when she was Secretary of State, her popularity level was actually pretty high. So I think part of her unpopularity at this point is a function of the campaign, not as how she functions as a public official.
How much of this, though, is also a product of the fact that these are, in many ways, two unprecedented nominations? I mean, obviously, we've got the fact that this is the first time that a woman has headed a national ticket for a major party. And then, you know, in Donald Trump's case, it often gets overlooked, but it's the first time that we have had a candidate who has held no other political office and hasn't been a general, basically,
right.
Head a national ticket. That there's a lot of voter uneasiness about these two that makes it a little easier for the negative stuff to stick with them.
Well, I mean, you know, I think from a tactical standpoint, and my career is as a communicator, when you look at a candidate like Donald Trump, and I don't think that we have to look at Donald Trump specifically. I think that we could look at any person who and goes from private life into a public office that, you know, I'm not talking about public offices nobody really pays a lot of media attention to, but a larger public office, whether it be Congress, Senate, governor, president. What you find is the career and the experience of a person that hasn't spent their whole life manicuring everything they've said and done to run for office. And I think, you know, for me, if I were a Democrat, that's exactly where I would go. And I think that's exactly where Democrats went at Donald Trump. Look at all these things that he said. Look at all these things that he did while he was a businessman. And so that does kind of become a weakness, I think, for you. On the other side, Hillary Clinton has a long career filled with, you know, a bunch of different policy positions, depending on, you know, where you stand on those. There's a lot there for opposition researchers or opposite campaigns, whether you want to go to Hillary Care or whatever you wanted to go to, some of the past scandals that the Clintons have been involved in, all of that, you know, gives you a lot of material. So it's unprecedented in a lot of ways. But in some ways, tactically, the campaign has worked out, I think, how you would predict it would have worked out, given that you had one person with a long public history of things that they've done and another done trying to get and maintain power, and someone who hasn't lived that life and now they're trying to get power.
Mm-hmm. Kip.
Well, I think the other unique thing, I think Marcus is right about his analysis, actually, with respect to that. But the other unique thing, Donald Trump is a unique character in American politics. We've never seen anything quite like him. Mm-hmm. He's a reality TV star and not a really successful businessman by a lot of accounts. If you look at all the people that do business with him in New York, they think he's kind of a grifter. So it's really pretty amazing to watch this on the national scale. And the response in the Republican Party has been one that I've never seen in my lifetime.
And you want to elaborate on that, what the response has been? And I'm going to give Marcus a chance to
respond. Well, usually the Republicans follow the Ronald Reagan's, you know, golden rule, which is never criticize a fellow Republican. But we've seen more of that in this election season than ever for a presidential nominee that I recall. At least, you know, I mean, I was only 2 years old when Goldwater ran in 64. So, three.
I have a lot of penetrating memories of
yeah.
that.
Yeah, you? But, yeah. you know, you've had John Kasich. You've had a whole bunch yeah. of Republicans who said they cannot support their nominee, and that's pretty unprecedented. Well, and really, on the other side, we haven't had that much.
Yeah.
Well,
Marcus, yeah.
Right. So, I think that's it just inaccurate. I think in every presidential election you've had Republicans that couldn't support other Republicans. I think you have Democrats that can't support Hillary Clinton. We've heard a lot of Democrats, Bernie Sanders supporters, who after she became the nominee saying, I would never support Hillary. There was a never Hillary movement, just like there was a never Trump movement. You know, it's nice to recite that never attack another Republican rule, but Reagan didn't even follow that himself. So, you know, I mean, we could try to paint.
Oh, gosh, you're saying there's hypocrisy in politics?
Well, we can try to paint things whichever way we want to. You know, one of the things I look forward to actually talking on Election Day is that maybe we can get away from some of our normal campaign talking points to talk about what we actually see happening. And I would say at the same time, just the way that Donald Trump got to where he is in the Republican primary, I mean, he was part of a movement, and it was an anti-establishment movement in the party. And so that was unique, and that is unique. And I think that, you know, some of the way that he came out, and you have John, you know, people like John Kasich, who now have a voice because a lot of people in the media want to be anti-Trump, and so we're paying more attention to a John Kasich, whereas in a past election, a sore loser, nobody would have paid attention to.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about politics on this election day. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. So I do want to dive into the role also of money and really where the parties are these days, because in some ways what we're seeing here is a fundamental change in the way the parties have to operate, independent money sources and all of that. I think Trump's rise is significant in that, you know, and I'm going to put Marcus on the hot seat a little bit with this one. Because that wasn't so much a traditional campaign as it was a kind of hostile takeover. The mm-hmm. Republican establishment was not thrilled mm-hmm. with the idea of Donald Trump's candidacy. What are the implications of that for the party and for the country?
Well, you know, the way the Republican Party operates just from a logistical standpoint was different than the way the Democrat Party operates from a logistical standpoint in as far as how delegates are allocated and just having super delegates. So whereas Democrats have much more of a party insiders have much more of an influence over their primary than Republicans do. Now, personally, excuse me, I think Republicans probably will take a look at that. Mm-hmm. Another thing, there were so many people in the Republican field that you could, as Donald Trump did, get through the primary without getting a majority of people that came out to vote in the Republican primary. And that's not to take away from his candidacy, but that's just a reality of the way the votes worked out. And so, you know, it'll be interesting to see how the party responds to that.
Go ahead.
If I could, address with respect to the money, I don't think money has made the difference in the federal campaign here and the presidential campaign as much, because Donald Trump has been so effective as a celebrity in garnering miles and miles of coverage that that has bypassed. In fact, he's not spent nearly the money that Hillary Clinton. I would say that I disagree with Marcus on the structure of the two parties. 8 years ago, Barack Obama did not have the support of the establishment of the Democratic Party, and he still took the nomination and became president. So it really depends on the person.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about politics on this election day with Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Two. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or find us on social media. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about politics on this election day with my guests, Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Two. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Kenny has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Kenny, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I just want to comment, just a very quick couple of comments. It's always interesting to me and sort of breathtaking that Republicans try to equalize the infractions that one side will do. They say that your Republican representative there in your studio just said, well, some Democrats have also rejected Hillary Clinton, like there's some kind of equivalence. Donald Trump has said things and has done things during this campaign that are just unfathomable for a decent society. The things that he was heard saying on that tape, the things that he's actually said in person on from the stage, you know, beat him up, all kinds of reprehensible things that he's represented. I've got grandchildren. We've been very careful to have to explain him to our grandchildren. My 9-year-old granddaughter gets it. She understands that he's a menace. And I'm not exaggerating any of this. Who would want their children or their wife or their sister being around this man? And that's what the Republicans have got to own at this point. You know, you can sit there in that studio and discuss him as though he's some kind of normal representative of a political party. But the Republicans have got to take responsibility for this, and this is not going to be easy, I promise you.
Okay. Thanks very much for the call, Kenny. I'm going to give Marcus a chance to respond. Thank you, Kenny.
Yeah. So, I think a lot of this probably falls on where you naturally fall politically, because personally for me, I have been completely offended by some of the things that Hillary Clinton has said. I think the deplorables comment was incredibly offensive. I think when she stood at a debate and said that there's institutional racism among law enforcement, that was offensive. We can talk about a hidden recording by someone 10 years ago when they were never thinking about running for public office. And most of the people I talk to, I say, hey, if I could take everything that you've said over the last 10 years and cut and paste it into something, could I make you look like a horrible individual? But we're talking about Donald Trump, and he was friends with the Clintons. The Clintons came to his wedding, but once he started running against them for president, all of a sudden he's the worst person in the world. I think that, you know, we have to be careful that we don't just take a slice of a statement here, a slice of a statement there, and think that we can completely paint a picture of someone, because there have also been a lot of people that have worked for Trump and with Trump over the years that have come out and said positive things about him. I think that to try to break down the complexity of any human being to a simple adjective is dangerous.
Is there? I'm going to stick with Marcus, but I will give you a chance, I promise, Kip, to win.
Kenny did my work.
But I'm going to say that, And I understand that there has been dissension to some degree with both parties because they are huge entities, uh-huh. you know, and not monoliths. But it does strike me that the levels, and I think it was USA Today reported that, you know, something like 24% of the elected officials, Republican elected officials in this country were refusing to endorse or rejecting Trump's candidacy. One of them, and I'm not going to name him because it was an off-the-record conversation, statewide elected official here in Indiana said he just couldn't go there, that he considers himself now an Indiana Republican but not a national Republican. And a lot of the reason is not just the kind of the offensiveness of the comments, but also many of the breaks from Republican doctrine. Has that created dissension within the party? And, you know, win or lose, where do you guys go from it? Go from here?
You know, I think that whoever is on the top of the ticket does kind of set a policy agenda for what their campaign is going to be, what their platform is going to be. And oftentimes we see in both parties that an individual's platform is different than their party platform. I think that there's been a lot of attention to the differences between what would be considered a traditional Republican campaign and what Donald Trump has been. I think that goes, though, to the uniqueness of who he was as a candidate, as an anti-establishment candidate. And I think that, you know, when you look at dissension in the Republican Party ranks, I think that comes cyclically when you've been out of power for a while. I think you do have – the party has to decide from a policy standpoint where they're going to go moving forward. And, you know, you can have presidential candidates that completely disagree with each other from election to election, just as you can have a presidential candidate like where Donald Trump stands on trade. Well, a lot of traditional Republicans,
yeah, he lost the Wall Street Journal on that.
Right. Wouldn't be at the same place. But that's where Donald Trump has been. And he won the party's nomination with that. So, you know, and trade is also an issue, I think, that separates Hillary Clinton from some of the more traditional union interests in her party. I think that you have a lot more of a, because Donald Trump is an anti-establishment candidate, a lot of elected officials who are very establishment probably do have a natural inclination to not support him because the establishment is where they got, where they are. The establishment is where they want to be. And Donald Trump has went at and attacked. I mean, I'm a Republican. Donald Trump has said things that I completely disagree with as well. I think in the end, though, parties work through these things. Parties evolve. Every party has Democrats had on trade. Republicans are going through their argument on trade right now. I think this is all part of a process that has been going since the beginning of political parties.
Kip, I'm going to give you a chance to weigh in.
Well, I think Donald Trump, like I've said before, is a unique person in American history, a unique politician, and he wasn't a politician. But I also think he has been a destructive force to politics. I think he's been a destructive force to the Republican Party. I think they're going to rue the day that they nominated him, and they will be dealing with negative things that he brought out in the electorate for a while. And I believe it's the racism, the sexism, the xenophobia that he has fomented, the anti-Semitism. It's been very unfortunate in that regard, I believe. And I agreed with the caller pretty much everything they said.
Gotten an email from our regular listener, Jerry. It gets kind of to the heart of this because Jerry's question is pretty simple. Whoever wins, will he or she be able to govern? If so, how? With a country that is this divided, and with, frankly, a political system in which it's easier to play defense than offense.
I think it's a particularly good question,
yeah.
And one that I worry about a great deal. And it just brings up something I said to some friends and something that I can't quite get my arms around. White males over the age of 50, like myself, in the United States of America, probably have it better than any set of human beings have ever had in the history of planet Earth. For the life of me, I don't understand what they're so angry about. and they remain in a permanent angry state, and there's no basis for it as a group of people. We men, white male American men over 50, have had it better than anybody else in human history, and so it does. It's not a logical thing, I think, in some respects. There's no doubt that we've had, economic upheaval, that we've had a whole bunch of those folks being left behind, but they still have it better than any other group ever in history.
I want to pick up on that point, but I'm going to give Marcus a chance to weigh in.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's a pretty narrow view of human beings. I think that you can have feelings that aren't based on your race or your gender. Mm-hmm. You can have a political view that's not based on your race or your gender, just based on what direction you want the country to go in and how you feel about it. And I think there are a lot of people that think that our country is going in the wrong direction. There are people that, you know, look at United States influence abroad and feel like things aren't as good as they should be or as good as they were. I think there are people that look at Obamacare as a huge federal boondoggle that is failing them as premiums rise and as they look at more and more insurers dropping out. I think that people are saying maybe there's been an overreach by the federal government and they're angry about that. And so, you know, I don't necessarily break people down into demographic groups and think that they should think this way because they're white or they're black or they're male or they're female. I think the anger can come from really anywhere, including what you expect from your federal government and whether or not you're getting that.
Is there, though, and I think this speaks to Kip's point, if you look at, we are looking at a pretty seismic shift in the American electorate and in the American population. You know, one of the figures I saw that shows me how quickly things have advanced is that in 1988, George H.W. Bush got just under 60% of the white vote in this country, and that carried him to a pretty decisive victory over Michael Dukakis. 24 years later, Mitt Romney got almost exactly the same percentage. I think it was 59.8 versus 59.7. And that was a fairly decisive defeat, which shows that the country is changing pretty rapidly. Is there a concern here maybe that in speaking to Kip's point, that status is being lost or some other presumed feeling of entitlement? I'll start with you on this, Marcus, mm-hmm. but since it was Kip's point, I'm going to let him speak to it.
Yeah, so I mean I'm not a psychic. I'm not going to go into the okay. minds of
okay.
of Fair Caucasian enough. Voters and yeah. think, hey, do you feel less powerful than you used to? I do think, though, that in as much as it affects political parties, I think that it's important for we've made a dirty word out of ideology, but whether you're liberal or conservative, you have an ideology. You are an ideologue. It's for those ideas to be communicated to people in an understandable and easy way, and for those ideologies to play themselves out in policies that can be enacted and explained well. And I think that, you know, moving forward, you know, we talked briefly about whoever's elected, their ability to unite the country. I do think that not too long ago, after the attacks of 9/11, we were a very united country. And I think that lasted for quite a while up until probably Katrina happened. We were a very united country. I think that there is still a capacity amongst Americans to be united, even if we disagree on policy points. I think that, you know, it should be said. I think Barack Obama has been one of the most partisan presidents we've ever had. He uses the White House to make partisan attacks on his opponents. And I think that that has fed into I mean, you can laugh at it, but you can't deny it. And that has fed into some of our partisanship. He has no major accomplished that received bipartisan support. That has fed into our divisions. And I think that, you know, it will be important for whoever is elected president, I think, because they will come in as a flawed president-elect, then president. They will have come through one of the most brutal campaigns in my lifetime. I think it'll be important for them to quickly and decisively reach across the aisle for a major accomplishment
Okay.
I can't let that.
And I can anticipate what your response is going to be, and I want to follow up on this. But I also want to get us to the Senate and gubernatorial sure. races at some point, too.
Well, let me just say, I believe that Barack Obama will go down in history as the Jackie Robinson of American politics. Much like Jackie Robinson, he's dealt with him. The way he has presided in office has been with dignity and restraint. Everybody knows that on election eve or election night, Newt Gingrich and his pals got together and said, we are going to try to make sure he's a one-term president. We want him to fail. The real problem has been that we've had a party that has been beholden to talk radio and conservative media and hasn't been really thinking over the course of the last few years. It's just been all reaction and not thinking. I long for the days of the intellectual conservative to bring their party back to sanity.
Got a question from a caller named Ruth, who didn't want to go on the air. Says this is directed toward you, Marcus. She wants you to explain your claim of equivalency between, and I'm going to slip the word in here because he has not been tried or convicted or anything, an alleged sexual predator like Donald Trump, and listeners' indiscretions. I mean, are there any of these things that if they were demonstrated to be true, would disqualify him from the presidency?
Right. So I think we're talking about that lawsuit that was thrown out thrice before.
Well, and also we've had, a dozen women claim that he made unwanted and resisted sexual advances on him.
Right. And we have this – I mean, just frankly, we have those accusations towards Bill Clinton as well. We had and then Democrats running to defend. He's never been convicted of anything. I think that it's – we live in a dangerous world when – it only takes the accusation of you to be guilty. I think that we do have due process in this country, and it should be important, and it should be followed. So I would just say that he hasn't – I wouldn't necessarily say that there is an equivalency of it, but I think that it's legitimate if someone wants to attack him on that. All's fair in politics. At the same time, it's legitimate if someone wants to attack Hillary Clinton on protecting who many see as a sexual predator – and some of the victim shaming that she's been involved in for her political expedience. I think that that's legitimate as well.
Well, let me reframe the question a little bit with Ruth's permission here. Is there anything now that's off limits? I mean, is there anything that is just because I'm sorry, for most people who are listening, they're going to have the same reaction I do. You know, if we're going to talk about sexual indiscretions or someone being a sexual predator and you launch the missile one way, you better expect it coming back the other way too.
So well, we are on the radio program. No yes. limits. So
yeah, we are indeed.
Well
we
done. Indeed. Way to get the title
we're
in. That's,
we're within the, but we, that's we good do branding. Operate within the yeah. FCC's limit, but let's be careful.
Okay. I don't know. I used to think that children were off limits, but we've seen Chelsea attacked. We've seen Malia and Sasha attacked.
The Bush daughters were attacked as well.
And the Bush daughters were attacked. I think they ought to be off limits. So hopefully there's some limits.
What do you think, Marcus? I mean, is this?
I think, just look at Twitter. Mm-hmm. And just look at Facebook. Just look at Instagram. There used to always be just kind of a joke. Not a ha-ha joke, but just a joke amongst political operatives that everyone talks about how they hate negative campaigns, but negative campaign ads work.
Yeah.
And so
really drive things. Yeah,
why would you stop doing something? The public responds to it. Well, the American public has created no limits themselves. And, we can sit in from a soapbox and complain about that. But the public themselves are the ones that are campaigns are a reaction to the public. And so I think a lot of time what we're seeing is a reaction to where the public has taken us.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the politics of this topsy-turvy and historic campaign year, talking politics here on Election Day with my guests, Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Two. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email, NoLimits@WFYI.org. You can find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking politics today on No Limits with my guests, Republican Marcus Barlow and Democrat Kip Too. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named Brad has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Brad, welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you for this conversation today. I guess I'd start off by saying that I guess officially as of today when I voted, I have to count myself as a now former Republican. But I'm so saddened by this year's presidential campaign in particular. And to the comment made earlier by Mr. Barlow about candidate Trump, I think in normal elections, it's commonplace that we disagree as Americans about issues like economic policy, about foreign trade, about job growth, about entitlement programs, and we get along with each other and we understand those as political differences and various points of view. But in this campaign, when so many of the issues have dwelled on matters of misogyny, of sexism, of xenophobia, of homophobia, of just outright disrespect for members of the human race in general, the discussion moves beyond political differences to major issues that I can't tolerate. And I have a duty, I feel, as a Christian and in my case as an Episcopalian, to challenge those who support those kinds of viewpoints. And that's where this campaign has gotten so ugly and where this top-of-the-ticket candidate for the Republican Party is just such an unfortunate development for the party and for the nation, and I guess is a fundamental reason why this is the first year that I cast a ballot predominantly for the Democrat candidate.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment, Brad. Marcus?
Well, you know, and just to kind of repeat what I said before, I think that this is somewhat a result of an individual who came from the outside, hasn't lived a life manicured to run for office. I think this is also a result of some selective perspective, because I think that some of the stuff that has come from the left has also been offensive. Some of the stuff that Hillary Clinton has said herself has been unprecedented as well. And I remember campaigns before. Some of the things that were said about George W. Bush during his reelection were completely unconscionable. I think that this idea that we used to live in a world where everyone just walked hand in hand and just talked policy is a bit of a fantasy. I do think that things are worse this campaign, but I don't necessarily think that one person is to blame for that. I think that it's both campaigns that took us there. And I think that they took us there because the American people have responded to those sorts of attacks. And so, you know, and I think that we do have a bit of an exaggeration, because I think that if you talk about illegal immigration, that doesn't make you a racist. I think that, you know, when you talk about some things, we like to attach a label to it when there are reasonable ways to have policy disagreements without throwing a label on someone that they're a bigot. So, yeah, I do think that this election is different, but I don't necessarily think that we haven't been in the gutter in politics for a while.
Kip.
A couple of things. I agree with Marcus and with the respect, it hasn't been one person who's caused this. I think that too many Republicans have not done what the caller did and reflect upon themselves, because I think most Republicans are well-meaning, well-thought folks, and they've gotten themselves behind a guy who isn't. And it is very unfortunate.
Well, but I've got a whole bank of phone calls and all of this stuff, and it sort of speaks to my point here. It's the thing we were talking about during the break. you know, in many ways, and it's affecting even our ability to talk about some of the other races here in Indiana that are going to have tremendous import. When we talk about the rise of Trump, when I look at this dispassionately, I'm trying to walk very carefully through here. Nobody's ever done anything quite like this guy has done before. As Kip pointed out earlier, he spent far less money than Hillary Clinton or many of his Republican rivals did to get the nomination. He often has played the media and journalists like a maestro.
Yep.
And you know, has figured out, has he created, in effect, a new path to political power in this country, Marcus?
I don't know if necessarily anyone after this will want to follow that path.
We're going to find out tonight. Maybe.
And just to the point I made before, because Donald Trump, as you said, has been a reality TV star. He hasn't been running for public office, but he's been in the public.
Although he expressed interest in running for president back in the 80s.
He did. So, but he's been in the public purview. Like I said before, Bill and Hillary went to his wedding. And I remember during the primaries just thinking, we're going to nominate a guy who the Clintons went to his wedding. But and then all of a sudden he ran for president, and now he's the worst individual, and I can't have my daughters listening to him, and I can't do all of these things because he now became a horrible person. And that's why before I said I think it's dangerous to take a selective view towards slices of comments that we've heard and attach labels onto people, because I don't think that that's fair. I don't think that he suddenly became a different person. I think he was suddenly painted as a different person, because there are also people who haven't gotten much media attention, prominent African Americans in his organization, prominent women in his organization that have said very positive things about Donald Trump, but that hasn't been a good news story, and so you don't hear from those people.
Yep. If I might. I mean, people like me have not liked Donald Trump for a long time. In fact, I recall several years ago when the Indianapolis Motor Speedway almost named him the Grand Marshal of the parade, there was a big backlash because he started the birther movement. And some of us were offended that the birther movement was what we thought it was all along, which was a dog whistle to racism. Mm-hmm. The first African-American president questioning his legitimacy. It goes back a long time with Donald Trump on this stuff. And so I don't think it's something that some of us just woke up when he was the nominee and said, gee, we don't like this guy.
Yeah, Kate, but at
Marcus,
the same
I'm
time—
I'm going to give you 15 seconds.
Yeah, it wasn't racism when that was brought up against John McCain. But all of a sudden it's racism now that Donald Trump said it about Barack Obama. I just think that in a lot of this we have arbitrarily thrown adjectives onto things that might not have necessarily been so.
We're talking about politics here on No Limits. Kirsten, welcome to the program.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that, you know, we talk about taking little splices of things that people have said, and I wanted to correct one of your guests when he said that Hillary Clinton said that there is institutional racism in law enforcement during the debate. She was asked if law enforcement struggles with implicit bias, and she said she thinks everyone struggles with implicit bias, which if you are a scientist, if you are a journalist, if you're an anthropologist, you understand that we all do have implicit biases. It's our nature. We see the world through our own eyes, and I just wanted to make that distinction because I think it's very important to understand that we all see the world through our own eyes, and we all do have implicit bias. Thank you.
Thanks very much for the call and the comment. And that's the other part of this, and I'm going to use this to shift slightly to the Senate race right now, because one of the things that has amazed me about this, I know, you know, both Evan Bayh and Todd Young, not super well, but reasonably well, and in person, they're two of the, you know, most courteous and mild-mannered guys you'd ever want to meet. And yet that race has turned into a mud bath like nothing Indiana has seen in a Senate race before. That's what I was referring to when I talked about the role of money, and particularly outside money, because we've not seen anything like this where, by the time all the votes are cast, there's going to be more than $50 million from outside the state and not, you know, and outside the candidate's control too. I might point out, Kip, I'm going to let you start on that one.
Well, and the reason for that, I think, is fairly obvious, and that is because the United States Senate hangs in the balance, and so the outside interests are trying to make sure that their interests are protected here in the state of Indiana. It's what swing states usually see in the presidential race: an inordinate amount of money spent in Florida, Ohio, Michigan, those places that we don't generally see that much in Indiana because we don't play nationally, and so the big money doesn't come in here. I think that's what the function of this Senate race is more than anything else. The Senate is on a razor's edge as to who's going to control it, and so you have all of the special interests on both sides pouring money into this seat.
Right, and I think that, you know, just to kind of piggyback off your point, that we do have in Indiana two very good candidates for Senate. So whether it's, you know, Todd Young, had Todd Young been anybody else, I think that you might have seen national interest on the right when Evan Bayh got in just say, well, he's got a $10 million advantage. He's got universal name ID in the state. I think that this might not be a good investment for us to put money in. But Todd Young was a very good member of Congress, and he's been a very strong Senate candidate. And so it kind of made him more attractive for their investment.
What I get, though, is this tendency, and I think the Kirsten at some level was referring to this, too, with Hillary, is the tendency of politics to reduce positions and, to some degree, people to caricatures here. The two guys I see on the screen, I don't know Donald Trump personally, so I can't speak to that. But the two guys I know, you know, Evan Bayh and Todd Young, do not resemble in any way the guys I see in these ads. Is there a level of distortion here that is detrimental to the process of self-government? I'll start with Marcus, but I want to hear Kip's thoughts on that too.
Well, I do think, in all fairness, we shouldn't equate what's happening on the Senate side to what's happening federally, because I think, honestly, from my perspective, what's happening on the Senate side is we haven't seen those kind of out-of-bounds attacks. I mean, if we want to talk about, you know, people should run on the record, I think a lot of the attacks, at least all of the attacks coming from Todd Young's campaign himself, from the NRSC, from the RNC, have been things about Bayh's record, not just in the Senate, but in the last 6 years. And I think that Evan Bayh didn't do himself any favors by mishandling those accusations himself. And so, you know, whereas in the presidential race, it's about a lot of accusations about who's more racist, who's more whatever. The Senate race really has been, what have you done? What will you do in Washington, D.C.?
Kip.
Well, I'm going to disagree with that. I think that the Senate campaign has been a character assassination of Evan Bayh. And it's been it isn't a positive development. I do believe that Evan Bayh had a long-established brand in the state of Indiana, and I didn't think it was going to be impenetrable. I thought it was going to be impenetrable, I guess I should say. So I've been a bit surprised at the level of success that Todd Young has had in bringing this campaign as close as it is, and we don't know who's going to win. It's probably a toss-up for this evening. Evan Bayh governed this state as a moderate. He was United States Senator as a moderate. All evidence points to the fact that that's how he would continue to be a United States Senator, and yet Todd Young brought in and questioned his character and everything else with respect to what he's done the last 6 years. But I really think it's fair to look at what kind of governor he was and what kind of senator he was, because that's what he's going to do when he returns to the Senate, be a senator. And I think that that's where it's probably, you asked the question, you know, what is it better to judge these folks on when they want to be public officials? Since we have two people who are public officials, we probably ought to judge them on their public record.
Well, but I want to talk about the role of particularly this, you know, what the New Yorker writer Jane Mayer has called dark money. I mean, the uncontrolled outside spending. And I talked with Senator Bayh about it a few days ago as part of ongoing discussions about his campaign. And, you know, he was saying this is something, he was pretty frank, I haven't seen before. And it's disturbing because it's not just that it's negative, but the two candidates can't control it themselves, that the race in some ways gets out of their control and takes them places that they just did not anticipate. Marcus.
Well, two things. One, just to kind of respond to something that Kip said, I think it's also fair to look at what someone has been doing lately when they want you to elect them. Evan Bayh hasn't been on the ballot since 2004. Mm-hmm. He hasn't faced the verdict of the voters since 2004. He voted for Obamacare and then he left. So he didn't get to face the verdict of the voters then either. As far as outside money goes, I guess I would have to you have to take it on a case by case basis as to the effect it has on the race, because I think what I've seen on both sides, for whether it's Democrat outside money or Republican outside money, they kind of have taken their cue from where the campaigns have laid their attacks and their messaging, and they're moreover just parroting that. Now, the NRA ad isn't something that Todd Young said himself, but all the other ads that I've seen in the Young race have been things that Todd Young has said. Same way with Evan Bayh, the outside groups have said things that he said. So I don't think that it's they've taken them places they didn't want to go.
Well, I think dark money is one of the most pernicious developments we have in American politics. I think it's taking away the average person's voice. I think Citizens United was probably one of the worst decisions in the history of the United States Supreme Court, and I think we have to do something about it. It has not affected the presidential race, as I said earlier, but it has affected everything down ballot.
Got an email from a listener named Mary. Mary asks, what do people mean when they say they don't like the direction the country is going? I suspect it means very different things. She points to the example of gay marriage, social obstruction of Supreme Court appointments, economy, trade agreements, immigration, etc. We are not going in a single identifiable direction. Is that part of the problem? That we're talking about a lot of these conversations, we seem to be talking about different things when we think we're on the same subject. I'm going to give each of you about 30 seconds on that. Marcus, you go first, please.
Yeah, I think every single person that says whether they think the country's in the right direction or the wrong direction, they have a personal view of what that means. I think there are larger ideological directions that a Republican president or a Democrat president might take you in some areas, but I think that also is always evolving too. So really it's based on the individual.
Kip.
Yeah, I think that question is almost immaterial to the individual, it is up to the individual to interpret. And I think that the thing that I would say that responds to is the country going in the wrong direction, I would think our politics is largely broken. Republicans in Congress, Democrats in the presidency cannot seem to function and get along and work towards a goal.
Well, I think that probably is going to have to be the last word, at least for the broadcast portion of this. I would like to invite our listeners and actually our guests to continue the conversation on Facebook. If you're so inclined, you can find us at No Limits WFYI. Marcus and Kip, if you guys would accommodate us by responding to some comments or questions on there afterwards, we would be grateful. Also like to invite our listeners to come back on Thursday when we're going to be talking with journalist, Boston Globe editor, and reporter Walter Robinson. He was the guy played by Michael Keaton in the Oscar-winning film Spotlight. I'd like to thank my guests, Kip Tu and Marcus Barlow, for what has been a lively and should have been 2 hours, but it was only an hour. And thank all of our listeners for the great questions and comments. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive Producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Cherzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.